have a shot.
Oh, baby, baby, we are back. It's a DFS Army fantasy football show. Today, I'm joined by DFS Army contributor and fellow best ball degenerate, Chris Felicetta. Chris, how you doing, brother?
I am doing great. I've just been drafting the big board like it's going out of style. I'm embarrassed to say already over 100 drafts into it.
Oh, wow.
I'm building a bit of a portfolio. So I've got plenty to talk about here as far as best ball ADP and the movements behind it.
I love that. So you at least had like a somewhat responsible drafting pattern last year where you were doing drafts while running. What's the weather like over there in New York City? You still able to get those steps in?
Well, today it's cold. And you know what? I am getting my steps in. Still Underdog Cardio Club. I don't think they've officially started that up for this year, but I heard that they are going to do that again. So there'll be some benefits attached to that. But I basically started doing, I thought I would do 50 drafts in this contest, the big board, because this was actually the contest I placed the highest in last year. I finished 13th overall in that out of like 28,000, which was my best showing. But because I hit one of the little pick'em parlays in the Super Bowl, so I had like a $400 like just, you know, sitting in my underdog account. So I'm like, I'll do about 50 of them. But now I just can't walk the dog or go running without drafting. So it's just I'm a degenerate. I've been firing away.
That. And that's why you are a fellow member of DFS Army, because we are a bunch of degenerates. Go check out all of our content over at dfsarmy.com. Chris, we are a bit of a niche type show with our season long type content and best ball content. But of course, over there, as the title would suggest, is DFS Army, DFS content constantly. The Discord is always popping and people are winning money. So dfsarmy.com. And listen, while you're at it, we are talking about best ball strategy. Now, our best ball service of choice, and there's a lot of good ones out there, but I think by far the best one is Underdog. So if you go over to underdog.com, use code DFSARMY for first-time deposits only, and you can get a deposit match up to $100. So listen, you deposit $100, you get $200, and that is going to be 20 of these way too early degenerate contests.
Compete against Chris. Ones.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'll be in there.
So you'll see us. And listen, so we wanted to jump on a show, Chris. You and I were chatting, and to set some context here, like you and I were chatting this, we started this draft on February 20th. So essentially the end of February. This was before the combine. This was before free agency. And so again, we're degenerates, but there was a lot of anticipation with the way that we were drafting. And obviously, you got to risk it to make a little bit of money. And I would say that when I analyze our team, both before the draft and now, or sorry, not the draft, before the combine, now after the combine and free agency, I kind of like how both of our teams are stacking up. It seems like we made some pretty good bets. So we'll get into that. So let's get started. I'm just going to do a quick rundown. So you were picking out of the sixth spot and I was picking out of the 11th spot. Now you've done a lot more than me, obviously. I've done about five or six of these drafts now, and I can definitely tell you that picking early or middle of these drafts, I have been a lot more confident with my teams coming out than when I'm at the turns, because where I found there's some major tier breaks, you have to make some big decisions. Even at the end of round three, it was tough to make a decision there. So
that third or fourth, like late third, fourth turn is very tough. And you ultimately chose to go at Fields, which looks good now after getting DJ Moore. That's proving to be a good value. But the receivers at that turn are kind of dicey. You're dealing with like Hopkins, who we don't know where he's going to play. Amari Cooper, who you took, who I think had a real nice year last year, but he always has, I'm always a little scared of injuries with him. He always seems to have something nagging. So it's like, I don't love him at that spot. Like I wish we were getting him maybe like fifth round, but I don't blame you at all for taking him there. Like that's a fair value.
Let's just quickly run through your team, and then we'll talk about your team, and we'll go to my team, and then go from there. So, at the quarterback position, you waited a little bit. You got Deshaun Watson at pick 91 for your first quarterback, and then you came back with Kirk Cousins and CJ Stroud. Again, this was before CJ Stroud kind of showed the world, hey, listen, like in terms of what's the job of a quarterback, reading defenses and throwing the ball. Yeah, CJ Stroud seems to be the best prospect in the draft this year, so you got him. At the running back position, you went Damian Pierce, Javonte Williams, Khalil Herbert, and then you started taking some swings with Devon Achane, Samaje Perine, and then Jerome Ford. I love that Jerome Ford pick.
Yeah, I think
wide receiver position. Yeah, at the wide receiver position, you went very stout here. You went Cooper Kupp, Garrett Wilson, DK Metcalf. Love that starting three. Then you went Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who is the first rookie wide receiver off the board. He's looking like he's going to be a stud, so love that pick. Then you went upside later on. So you went, and this is interesting. So pick 54 was your last pick for with JSN, and then you waited all the way to pick 126, which is great. You went Elijah Moore, then Sky Moore, and Terrace Marshall, which that's looking like it could be a decent
one. That looks, yeah, that does look like it could be a good pick.
And then Darius Slayton, who got paid surprisingly high when you compare this wide receiver class. And then, and this is what I love, you went TJ Hockenson right at his ADP at pick 43. Then you came back with Trey McBride and Darnell Washington in the high 100s, early 200s pick. So overall, Chris, I love your team. I was texting you throughout this draft and say, man, I love that pick. Man, I love that pick. And me, I hate my pick. I hate my team. I hate my team. But let's talk about the team. So overall, for the people, just to summarize, you went three quarterbacks because you waited on quarterback.
Yeah.
Six RBs, eight wide receivers, but you spent a lot of that early capital on wide receivers and with three tight ends, even though you went early with TJ Hawkins. And so, first of all, very high-level strategy. Do you have a general makeup of what you like to build your teams? Like, are you always three QBs and three tight ends, or how does that work?
No, not always. Generally, like I would say probably like roughly 75% of these drafts I've done, because I tend to wait on QB, I tend to wait on tight end. I'm a three quarterback, three tight end guy. But in builds where I take a Mahomes, an Allen, or a Hurts, I'm generally only going to take two QBs. Because if I'm taking, to get them, you have to take them in the second round. So
yeah.
if they fail, you're pretty much sunk anyway. So I'm not taking a third QB, and you think you're going to use their score, you know, 80% of the weeks. And the same at tight end. Like if I take a Kelce, I'll probably only take two tight ends.
Yeah.
But I think he's the only one really. I mean, occasionally, like if I do a Pitts or a Waller or something. And I love Hockenson, but like that was kind of one of a bit of a regret from this draft. When I looked at it and I saw that Kyle Pitts and Dallas Goedert both went a full two rounds later, I could have had either of them in the sixth. Like, I don't think Hockenson is a full two rounds better than those two guys. So I think even though I got him at ADP, in hindsight, I don't know if that's necessarily a great pick right now.
But yeah, I mean, that's always tough to kind of juggle, because you don't know where these guys are going to go.
Exactly. And a lot of times you will miss on the, you won't get them in the sixth. But just in hindsight, in this particular draft, I think I could have had either Goddard or Pitts in the sixth. So I'm like, is Hockenson in the fourth really value there?
Yeah, so I haven't formally started to build my rankings and my tiers yet, because I like to do a few of these drafts first, just because when you're on the clock, you really get a pulse of what you actually want to go. And when we're building our tools for DFS Army, we want to make sure that what we're recommending is actually what we're going to do, right?
Exactly.
But one of the things is you chose Hockenson over George Kittle, and they went, I mean, within four picks of each other. But I'm curious about that decision making, because right now I'm leaning George Kittle over TJ Hockenson, but to me, they're going to be in a very similar tier, if not the same tier. So tell me about that. I mean, Hawk kind of had his breakout season finally last year, but George Kittle, when he's healthy, has been pretty darn good every year. So
yeah, that's the key for me, the when he's healthy. And
yeah,
I think
yeah,
I kind of was anticipating, and this is like, they're right next to each other. Like, I have no problem going Kittle over Hockenson. I think that's a fair like debate, and I'm going to spread exposure out to both. I don't think I'm going to be heavily overweight either, but I'm happy to take either at that ADP. But I thought that Thielen was going to get cut. So I think that Hawk looks like the clear number two there. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Kittle, there's the more of an injury concern. And I think I'm also a little concerned with that quarterback situation now. Like, Lance didn't throw to Kittle nearly as much as Purdy did. And now you have Purdy recovering from surgery, who's not going to be ready till week one at best. And they brought in Darnold, which kind of surprised me, because I think Darnold's I knew they would bring in a veteran, but I think Darnold's a little better of a quality than what I expected them to bring in to kind of compete with Lance this offseason. So I just felt a little uncertain about that whole quarterback situation. I've taken some Lance, I've taken some very late Purdy, like last round Purdy, but I do think it was a little concerning to me that Lance is probably going to get the first crack at the quarterback there, and he he's not going to throw as much, and he didn't seem to throw to Kittle as much. Small sample size relative to Purdy. Like, all of Kittle's best production came with Purdy at QB.
Oh yeah, I mean, should he rode me to a championship, or to the final, anyways. I ended up losing in a championship, but he rode me there just with his playoff performance, which was amazing. I mean, Sam Darnold got a 1 year, $4.5 million, which it's decent backup quarterback money. But to your point, I mean, this is going to be a conversation all offseason, right? Who's going to be the starting quarterback in San Francisco? Because we know that, I mean, listen, you got to give Brock Purdy credit. He performed well. He did what he was asked to do. I still have of the opinion that, I mean, if Trey Lance can freaking stay healthy, he should be able to take over that starting job. But the thing is that Purdy, I mean, if he's not going to be healthy till week one, that means that he's not going to be able to participate in the offseason, meaning that if Lance can actually perform, like, I don't want to be the San Francisco coaching staff making the decision who you're going to start. Lance, who you took in the first round, third overall pick, if he looks good in training camp, or Brock Purdy, who showed that he could actually do it in real life games. I think Sam Darnold, he's more just like an absolute backup plan. We've seen, I mean, San Francisco saw it firsthand. Like, they were desperate at the quarterback position in that NFC Championship game, and I could see why they wanted a little bit of extra insurance. So I'm not worried about Sam Darnold. I think it's a good spot for him, because if he does have to play, somebody in DFS probably start. Yeah, exactly. But to me, that doesn't worry. But yeah, your point is well taken. Let's talk about Garrett Wilson a little bit here, because you got Garrett Wilson at pick 19 overall. And right now his ADP as of this morning is right around the 1-2 turn at pick 14. So this is just a perfect example, people, of some of the values that you can get early on. And now five spots may not seem like a lot, but in the second round, that is significant. So tell me about the Garrett Wilson pick. Are you a Jets fan or a Giants fan?
No, I'm a Giants fan, but I've watched enough Jets being here in New York, and Garrett Wilson just jumped off the screen to me. I'm like,
I know.
You watch this guy, you're like, he's electric. Like, this is a dude who is going to be a perennial all-pro. He won Rookie of the Year with, like, the worst quarterback play you can imagine. So now even a 40-year-old Brett Favre, 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers is a massive upgrade over the combination of Zach Wilson, Mike White, the dude with the tattoos from Dakota or whatever, all the random quarterbacks they threw out there last year. Like, if he could put up those numbers with that crew, like, I'm assuming, and I've been drafting as such, that Rodgers is going to be the Jets quarterback. He wants to be there. The Packers want to get rid of him. There doesn't seem to be any other real suitors. So if you're upgrading to Aaron Rodgers, I think Garrett Wilson could have a monster season.
I love Garrett Wilson, man.
I've taken a lot of Elijah Moore at value too, but now there's like rumors that he could potentially be included in the trade to Green Bay that brings Rodgers there. So I hope that doesn't happen. I'd like to see him stay in New York and be a three receiver, set with Lazard, Garrett Wilson, and Elijah Moore. But, you know, even if he's the number 2/3 in Green Bay, I think he could put up enough to justify where he's going in like the 10th, 11th round or whatever. 12th round.
I could see the Jets doing something like that, because I mean, Elijah Moore did fall out of favor with the coaching staff last year, which, I mean, it was such a disappointing second season for him. Hard to say if it would be a bump up if he got traded. I mean, it'd probably be a lateral move. I mean, it can't get much worse. I like Alan Lazard in New York. I think even if by some miracle Rodgers doesn't come over, I mean, he's going to be a pretty good replacement for Corey Davis. He's probably as good, if not better, at the stage of his career.
Yeah, and coaches love him because he's a really good run blocker. So he's going to be on the field. Like Lazard, I'm drafting as if it's Rodgers. So I think Lazard is going to return good value relative to where he's going. Like, I didn't see that trade coming. I wish I had drafted more Lazard, and I'm starting to pick up a little bit more now.
Yeah. Listen, I was okay drafting him at his ADP last year. The geek was pretty high in him for a lot of good reasons. I mean, the logic made a lot of sense. Last summer, he was anyways. I would say it was a disappointment versus where he got drafted.
Yeah,
season. It wasn't great. I mean, in general, I mean, I know you didn't pick up Aaron Rodgers here, but like, where are you ranking Aaron Rodgers in terms, assuming he goes to the Jets as what, like a mid-range QB2 at best? I mean, I don't think he had a game where he scored more than 20 PPR or fantasy points per game last year.
No, because you're getting no rushing. You're getting no rushing floor with him. Like, yeah, like you said, like mid two. But I am taking him, though, because I think right now it's like the best thing you could do right now is just like closing line value, you know, just like get guys definitely three or four, you know, hopefully rounds before where they're going to go. And like you're going to get some Rodgers is going to get a bump when the trade eventually happens. Like there's still people that aren't comfortable with that, you know, being uncomfortable drafting without knowing 100%. Like you're going to see. Like even we were just talking about before we went on, like Brandon Cooks, like, you know, yeah, he's going to see a nice little one or two round bump because nobody knew where he's going to play. Like you just kind of, So I've gotten a decent amount of Rodgers because I'm like, this is like for someone like me who drafts, I'll be drafting until the season tips off. I'll be drafting in the Best Ball Mania. I'll be drafting on DraftKings. I'll, you know, might fit max this contest. Like I'm getting my Rodgers now because I think this is going to be the barring some like unexpected, like, you know, ACL tear or something. I think this is the best price you're going to get on Rodgers. So like this is where I'm getting my shares. So before the trade happens, while the uncertainty is baked into the price.
I'm glad you mentioned DraftKings because are there best ball contests up yet?
They're not up yet. No, at least not last I checked. The other day, I think I looked.
Yeah. So, Underdog is one of the earlier best ball contests that you can get. And it's a very, very sharp room. It's harder to win in Underdog versus, I think, other style sites. DraftKings, to me, has been by far, when I go back, I only did it for the last two seasons, but it's been by far my most profitable site.
Oh, what the rooms are so soft on DraftKings.
You basically, you take your Underdog ADPs, and I understand. So Underdog is 0.5 PPR, whereas DraftKings is full PPR. But other than that, I mean, you take very, very similar ADPs, and if you just kind of draft it based on that, you're going to do well in DraftKings. So don't forget about DraftKings. If you go hard in Underdog throughout the summer, come July, August, when the more casual type player starts playing best balls, highly recommend get some exposure over at DraftKings. And I promise you, especially if you're following DFS Army and our strategies, you will profit. I want to talk to you about two other players on your team that really stood out to me. Deshaun Watson is your QB1. You got him at 91 overall in round eight. I love that value. I'm getting a fair share of Deshaun Watson right around that range, especially if I'm winning on quarterback. And in two of my drafts, just like you, I had him as my QB1. To me, it seems like he's a pretty, I don't want to say obvious, but pretty obvious potential bounce back candidate, right? Last season, he came in late in the season. He hadn't played for 2 years. Like, we know what this guy is. He was, before he was suspended, a top five quarterback in the league. So tell me what the Deshaun Watson pick. Do you like it? Are you comfortable with him as your QB1?
Yeah, for sure. At that value, I got him after ADP a little bit, I think. And at that point, I was just looking for value. And like you said, this is a guy who we've seen be a top four or five fantasy producer at the quarterback position, and we're getting him at a pretty decent discount because he sucked last year, to be fair. Like he was terrible. He was worse than Jacoby Brissett, but like you said, he hadn't played for 2 years. He's still only what, like 27 years old, maybe. He's still like,
He's still a young guy,
right in his prime.
Yeah.
So I think with the full off season to practice with the team of like, you know, he had 6-7 games, whatever, he had to shake the rust off. I think this is going to be a decent bounce back season for him. So like, I'm not going to be like massively overweight Deshaun Watson, but like when I see him slip around or two like that, I think he's definitely gives you the upside that not many other quarterbacks in that range give you.
Yeah. I mean, so you got him in round eight. I was actually considering him in round eight but he would have been my QB2. And I was desperate to get some upside running back depth at that spot, and I got a player we'll talk about in a little bit there, but I was tempted to go Deshaun Watson there because I love him, just that potential upside. I mean, listen, like you just go back over the years. I mean, last year it was Justin Fields who was going right around this range where massive upside, definitely some question marks, but those are the types of smart risks that you need to take in order to really, I think, take down some of these contests, especially these big tournaments like this, right?
Yeah.
And to your point,
this has 120,000 entries in it. Like, you're going to need some upside there.
Absolutely. And I think what I like the most about the way that Underdog does it is that they actually will reset the drafts. So this tournament will end come
yep.
the NFL draft. And then it's essentially like a new season, which I like that because things change. But in that way, if there is dramatic movement with these rookies following the draft, it's not going to impact and make you curse the fact that, oh, why did I go do this early tournament? So I love that fact because, listen, there's uncertainty with the rookies right now. Hell, when we did this, it was uncertainty with free agents, but everybody's on the same plane.
It's a level playing field. We all have the same lack of information. And then exactly. like with the way you said how it's a new slate come the draft, you can reassess your takes and you can move, make moves on a player that you didn't necessarily draft. Like right now, I don't have enough Rashad Penny. Like Rashad Penny mm-hmm. was going before he signed with Philly, which was obviously kind of like the nut location for him. He was going like 16th, 17th round. And now he's going in the 10th round, which like, I'm not going to take a lot of Rashad Penny here because mm-hmm. I'm competing with teams that have Rashad Penny in the 16th or 17th round. I'll wait till it's a level playing field. And once, you know, the full season slate starts, like, and nobody's got a huge, like, 6-round advantage on me. If I want to take Penny at the 10th round, I'll be happy to take him there where I'm only competing against other 10th round, you know, Rashad Penny teams. I think he might even go up more than that. He's an interesting one though, because it's so boom mm-hmm. bust. Like he could, if he played 3 games, you wouldn't be surprised if he was, but every time he's on the field, he's electric. So
he's amazing.
You know, if he was like the RB8 this year, you wouldn't be surprised either. But if he played 2 games, you wouldn't be surprised. So it's like it's
in the draft that we were in. In the draft that we're in, he went right at the start of round 16 at pick 181 overall. Rashad Penny was one of those guys. I don't know about you, Chris, but every time he would be there, I'm like, eh, he'd be in my queue.
Yeah, exactly.
I could probably wait one more round for Rashad Penny. I could probably wait one more round. And then he ended up going like, so this is for some context. These are the guys that went around him. Nico Collins, John Metchie, Khalil Shakir. Then Rashad Penny went. Then I took Pierre Strong. This was before James Robinson signed.
Yeah.
Bang. Good. Rest in peace, Pierre Strong.
I had a lot of Pierre Strong, too. And then followed
by Paris Campbell, Isaiah Likely. So, like, that's the range of guys. It's pure
upside.
None
of those guys can win you a league. And Rashad Penny can. Like, Rashad Penny can be, like, an event, like a high advance rate league-winning type player.
Absolutely.
If he stays healthy. Giant if. But, you know, you need a lot of ifs to go right if you're going to win a contest with 118,000 people in it, you know?
He could definitely be one of those guys to make a difference. Last player that I really want to talk about on your team is Khalil Herbert. Now, this is a guy that, similar thing, it's like, I could probably get him next round. I can probably get him next round. I've got him a few shares of him throughout the drafts. You got him in the 10th round to pick 115 overall. I love that value. I guarantee you his value is going to, or his ADP is going to go up now that they don't get a true, somebody who can really compete with them. I mean, you got Devonta Foreman, who he's okay. But Khalil Herbert is still, I think, as of right now, the leader in the clubhouse to be the starting running back. Great value.
Yeah, I like him there. So like 10th round, I think he'll probably maybe settle as like a 7th or 8th round guy by the time, you know, the draft start after the NFL draft. But that's just like a watch the film guy. Like every time I see him like on the field, I'm always impressed. He's one of these guys like a Tony Pollard that like has never had a full opportunity, but you know, but then when you see it, you're like, okay, this guy's got some juice. This guy is a well-rounded player. And if given the opportunity, he could greatly, outproduce his draft slot. So he's a dude as like an RB3-4 that I'm going to try to get a lot of, you know?
Yeah. I mean, one thing I will say is that when the Bears were at the podium at the combine answering some questions, there was a question about Khalil Herbert and essentially, I said, yeah, I mean, he's got to do a little bit of work, but we like Khalil Herbert. Like, it wasn't like this glowing endorsement. So I was thinking all along that they weren't going to get one of these top tier. Like, they weren't going to re-sign David Montgomery. They weren't going to go after Miles Sanders. I'm still convinced they're going to go and probably get somebody in the draft. And depending who that is, I mean, if they go even like a Zach Charbonnet or something like that, that would worry me in terms of his usage next year. But I mean, obviously, if they decide to just go nuclear at 9 and pull the trigger on Bijan Robinson, like that's it, right? But I mean, whoever's going to take Bijan, like it's going to nuke that entire
backfield. Do you have any feel for where you think he's going to go? Like, I don't have any real good feel for him.
Here's the thing, right? Like, it's really tough because I think legitimately, and just look at the way that these contracts are being signed, right? Like, the RB market was depressed this year in free agency. And I think teams are getting smarter that it doesn't make sense to allocate resources to these players. Like, look no further than Isaiah Pacheco last year with the Kansas City Chiefs, right? Like,
yeah,
they used him as a workhorse, especially in the latter part of that season and during the Super Bowl, right? I mean, he had a lot of usage and he was a major contributor to that Super Bowl run. Teams see that, and it's a copycat league. So does he have the talent to be a top five pick like a Saquon Barkley, like a CMC? I say yes. And I think the general consensus is that, yes, this guy is in that conversation in terms of upper echelon talent at the running back position. But do teams really want to spend that premium draft capital? Now, I'm very, very fantasy focused, Chris. So quarterbacks, same, running backs, wide receivers, tight ends, like that's my primary focus. But just talking, like, listen, I listen to a lot of draft shows. And when you look at the defensive positions, there is a giant tier gap between about 12 to 20, where those people in like the teens, those players in the teens are really valued in the 20s.
Yeah.
So potentially I could see a team there taking a swing on Bijan Robinson. I mean, it kind of makes sense. I could see it potentially that the Chicago Bears could take a swing at 9, right? That, like, that, to me, that's kind of where he should be valued at. But yeah, I mean, shoot, like, he could fall to the round 2. Like, we saw Ken Walker last year fall to round 2.
So Breece Hall fell around.
Breece Hall fall to round 2. So, like, these elite talents are falling to the start of round 2. So I think there's going to be – it just takes one team to fall in love with this guy and take him in the 20s. But, no, I really don't have a strong lean.
What do you think about his ADP at where he's going in these drafts at, like, basically the 1-2 turn? Like, last year, Breece Hall was going in, like, the 5th round. Like, I remember Jonathan Taylor, when he came out, was going in, like, the 3rd round. Like, this seems a little rich, like, not knowing the landing spot. I've gotten a few shares of Bijan, but, like, I was hoping we'd be able to get him in the 3rd round. Like, and now that's not ever been the case. He's been, like, a 1-2 turn, like, you know, 14 in that range. Pretty much from as soon as these contests open.
He went 9 in our draft, which is
no,
crazy.
You see that all the time. He goes anywhere from, like, you know, 7 through 15, I would say, is kind of the range that you see him go in these drafts.
I agree with you. I think it's a little bit high. I mean, I'm in a draft right now where it's a slow draft and it's still ongoing. I have the 12 pick, so I ended up going I went Eckler and Bijan. I decided, you know what? Listen, let's go RB heavy, right? You know, you want to play with your builds, and I wanted to get a share of Bijan because I hadn't yet, and probably a little bit rich. The thing is, though, when you look at the quality of the running back class this year, like, even in our draft, there was only 4 of these running backs going in first round, but typically you only see about 3. You'll see Christian McCaffrey, you'll see Austin Eckler, and you'll see Jonathan Taylor that are going to typically go in round 1 of these drafts because even though it's 0.5 PPR, a lot of these drafters are really shifting towards a wide receiver heavy build because that's been successful the last 2 seasons, right?
Yeah. These zero RB sellers. I've noticed that even Eckler usually falls out of the first round now at the last week or so because of these trade rumors. Yes. Now, I don't know if anything's going to come of that. It doesn't seem like – I haven't heard any particular team connected to Eckler, but it's been enough talk that I've seen him go late in the 2nd round even in certain drafts.
I have a really hard time seeing a team that's going to trade for Austin Eckler and his fantasy value is going to increase. At absolute best, it'll be neutral, right? But realistically, it'll probably be a decline because just the way that he's used – in LA, it's just it's perfect, right? It's perfect for his skill set.
That's goal line and pass catching role. Like,
And he looked good. So no, I think that's a little bit risky, but no, I mean, I'm still taking I'm taking Saquon Barkley over Bijan Robinson. To me, that's just smart play. I would probably consider taking Ken Walker. I don't have any Ken Walker yet, but I would probably take Ken Walker over Bijan Robinson.
Yeah.
I didn't
He's
in this other draft.
Like that 1-2 turn, like Ken Walker and Breece Hall. That's like the decision point of backs that you always see on like the 1-2 turn. And I think
so. Breece Hall still?
Yeah.
Breece Hall, I mean, Breece Hall might not ready.
I've even seen Breece drop into the 3rd. Like, I think people are a little scared. For some, it's kind of weird, I guess. The Javonte, they both had the same injury, but Javonte's is apparently worse. There's more ligaments involved that he tore. So like Breece Hall is going, you know, basically at the 2-3 turn there. And now Javonte is like a 7th-8th round pick.
Do you find it interesting that Michael Carter is basically going like the last round of drafts?
You know, he got beat out by Zonovan Knight by the end of last year. Like, I think I'm fine if you want to throw a dart on Michael Carter. I had a ton of Michael Carter last year. I was impressed with him in his rookie year. And that was a guy that, like, on DraftKings, I'm like, okay, well, I'm getting the full point for PPR that I wanted to load up. I had a lot of Michael Carter as, like, my fifth or sixth running back. But so I have no problem with, like, taking a flyer on him. And especially in these, I think people might forget, like, this contest is 20 rounds as opposed to the normal regular season underdog contests are 18 rounds. So in that 20th round, it's just take somebody that you like. You know, you can take more chances. Yeah. You can take more flyers and even positionally too. So, like, I like a lot of the rookie tight ends in that last round.
Yeah.
As guys, it's like a third tight end that I wouldn't take in a regular season draft.
I just think what's so interesting is, like, Michael Carter and Elijah Moore both, right? 2 years ago, they had pretty solid rookie seasons. And then last year, they just were out of favor with the coaching staff for whatever reason. But we saw the talent. We saw it.
Yeah. So no, I agree. I'm still
going to bank on talent, especially at that price.
Yeah.
Okay, let's jump to my team. We won't spend as much time on my team because it's a little bit more boring, but let's get going here. So, again, I was pick 11, and my team turned out to be – I only went two quarterbacks. I went Justin Fields at the end of round three, and then I got Daniel Jones. Then at their RB position, I went Saquon Barkley, Joe Mixon. I went Zach Charbonnet, the rookie, Sean Tucker, the rookie, Pierre Strong, and then Chuba Hubbard. And then at the wide receiver position, I went Stephon Diggs, Amari Cooper, Jameson Williams, Cortland Sutton, Juju, Isaiah Hodgins, John Mechie, Rashi Rice, the rookie, and Jaden Reed, the rookie. And finally, I did wait on the tight end position. I went Dawson Knox, pick 131 overall, my first tight end.
Yeah,
it was one of those things, man, where I was, it's just the tier was gone, and it felt like a reach every time. But at some point, you got to fill the spot.
Yeah, at some point, you got to fill it out. Yeah. But if you take especially in these 20-round drafts, take three tight ends late, upside guys, and I think Dawson Knox is a good example. I think you could get by.
Yeah, so I went Dawson Knox, Mike Gesicki, and Jake Ferguson. Now, the reason I ended up going Jake Ferguson essentially is one of my last picks was because right now he's the tight end one in Dallas.
Yeah, it looks like that's going to be the case, especially with them just paying Brandon Cooks today. I don't think I don't think there's any chance they're going to re-sign Schultz.
No, Schultz is gone. He's as good as gone. I'm convinced of that. I mean, I could see them. There's some pretty tantalizing rookies in the draft this year. And listen, there are some of these draft experts, quote unquote experts, that have three tight ends going in round one. I don't see that happening, but like the Michael Mayers of the world, the Luke Musgraves of the world, these are top tier talents. But Jake Ferguson, you're under his belt.
No, I think he's a perfectly good round 20 flyer as a third tight end. Like he showed enough to make that an interesting pick.
Yeah. So, it's last round picky. And I wanted to get another tight end just in case. But so at my quarterback position, I'm pretty happy with my picks. I mean, Justin Fields, he's actually going. So I got him at the end of round three. He's now going with the recent news more so mid round three. So I got a couple spots of value there. And then same thing with Daniel Jones. Listen, I just looked at an upside quarterback at that spot. And so far, free agency has turned out, I think, to at least protect his position. I think he's going to be a solid QB2 with some QB1 weeks with that rushing upside. So I love that. At the RB position, love Saquon Barkley at the right around the early round two. Now, Joe Mixon gives me a lot of heartburn. This was a guy, you're not supposed to draft scared, but this was me drafting scared. I just saw a massive tier break at the running back position. And listen, like, there's obviously some uncertainty here, but we were talking about this before the show. Like, I haven't heard an update. Like, remember there was, he's going to be charged. And then his agent came out and said, no, he's not going to be charged. Like, I don't remember hearing if he was ever actually formally charged with anything.
Yeah. I don't think I've heard anything to that extent either. And like you were saying before the show, like, even if he does, it probably won't get litigated by the NFL until next season. So like in the situation that Kamara is in now, like, everybody knew Kamara had this thing hanging over his head last year, but he wouldn't serve a potential suspension until this upcoming season. So it feels like that's going to be a similar case for Mixon. Like, it doesn't feel like we're going to get any resolution suspension wise on Mixon this season. So I think it's, where he's going, I think, would you get him in the fifth round, late fifth, early sixth?
I got him at pick 62 overall.
Okay.
So, and he's going later. Fifth, five, six turn. Early sixth round is where I got him.
Yeah. And he's even going later than that now. So, like, if he does play a full season for the Bengals, like he's going to be a screaming value there. Like, you know,
I hope so. And to your point, I mean, if he is going to play for the Bengals, like he hasn't been cut yet, right? We've seen it with Ezekiel Elliott with the post June 1st cut. Like, so I feel like at this stage of free agency, we're recording this on Sunday morning, March 19th. So a full week of free agency has come and gone. There's definitely still some players out there, but for the most part, Joe Mixon is still a Bengal, and I'm going to assume he's going to be a Bengal until he's not. Zach Charbonnet was my RB3.
Really like,
and yeah, so this was before the combine. Zach Charbonnet was, for me, I still think, we were talking about this last week on the show when I had Flex Matt on, I still think he's at least in the conversation before we see landing spots as potential RB2 in this class. Now, Jahmyr Gibbs, I still have as the RB2, but his size worries me just a little bit. And if he ends up in a role where he's not the full-time starter, then that upside could be capped. Zach Charbonnet has a pretty complete profile. The UCLA running back, he's 214 pounds. He's 6 foot. He's a big dude. He ran a 4.53 at the combine. And
for his size adjusted, that's good. That's what you needed. He didn't blow it away, but he did what he needed to do at that size.
He was good for that size. And what I like here is that he did participate in the passing game. He had a 14.5% college target share. So to me, big body back, projected round two capital, and he checked all the boxes that you wanted to check in terms of the athleticism at the combine. So again, this was before the combine, but range of outcomes, he was somebody that I liked. I took a swing on him, and I think legitimately he's going to be a pretty solid pick. Another rookie I took a shot on a lot later, pick 134 overall, was Sean Tucker. This guy was a track star in university and college. So again, I'm just going for the speed. He didn't actually test at the combine, so he's still a little bit more of a black box.
And I just saw this today. I meant to bring up to you because you picked him. He actually posted on Twitter this morning, like, videos of him doing the testing. And now I guess you kind of take this with a grain of salt because who knows how many tries he actually used to get this. But he shows himself being professionally filmed running a 4.33, a 4.39, and doing a 41 and a half inch vertical. And like, he posts a video that said, I didn't participate at the combine because of a medical exemption that I'm clearing up. Here's my stuff. And then posted this video. So if those times are real, like, that puts him right there with, like, you know, the most athletic backs at the combine. And
yeah, I mean,
the videos are there. They're real. He did them. Like, it's maybe he might've had more tries to do it than the guys at the actual combine did, but you know, it's electronic, you know, measurements, stopwatches. He did it with all the legit equipment. So if he's really running a 4.33, he's going to get some draft capital because he was very productive at Syracuse.
Yeah. Very productive. He's 5'9", 207 pounds. He had a college target share of 15.8%, which I love to see. In his last season, he had 36 receptions. He's going to be an early declare.
Yeah.
Over 1,000 rushing yards the last two seasons. He had almost 1,500 rushing yards in 2021. This guy can be a dog, man. At this stage of the draft, like, these are the types of players that I want to be taking upside swings on for sure. Pierre Strong, not a lot of sex appeal there. I was going for upside. I mean, notoriously, the Patriots don't like to use rookie running backs. But when Pierre Strong was drafted, this was James White was still on the team. They shortly cut James White there, shortly thereafter. To me, he's kind of that James White replacement. James Robinson.
And I think he looked pretty good in the little bit he got to play last year, Pierre Strong. Like, I was taking a lot of Pierre Strong before the James Robinson signing. But I don't necessarily believe in James Robinson. I think. He got beat out by Zonovan Knight and Ty Johnson late last season, like after the Jets acquired him. Two different teams gave up on him last year. That seemed like a weird signing for the Bills. I'm not the Bills, the Patriots, to give him somewhat decent money.
Well, yeah, so it was originally reported differently, but I've got here exactly what they actually ended up paying him. If you bear with me 1 second here. It was 2 years, $8 million, $4 million a year. Doesn't sound like a lot, but when you look at the free agency class, Chris, he was the fourth highest paid running back in the class this year. To me, that just doesn't compute, right? It doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I would have rather had Deonta Foreman for $1 million less.
Penny got a lot less than that too.
Yeah. How much did Penny end up getting paid?
It's like nothing. Penny got a really,
I mean, Rashad Penny, oh my God. He got $1.3 million.
Yeah. So how did James Robinson get four times what Penny got? I mean, the Eagles are shrewd, as I think what it comes down to.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. That's more so a good one for the Eagles, and just shake your head again at Mr. Bill Belichick. And listen, as a Patriots fan, gotta say, man, living in purgatory sucks. It absolutely sucks. So let's move on to the wide receiver position here. So Stephon Diggs, I still have him as a top ranked wide receiver in his class.
Of course, yeah.
This year, so pick. Love that. I got Amari Cooper right at his ADP. I didn't love that pick, but Amari Cooper was quietly good last year. To your point, he actually kind of fell off with Deshaun Watson, which
oddly not what you would expect. But
well, I mean, it goes back to the fact that Deshaun Watson hadn't played in so long. I'm banking on the fact that full year. I'm assuming you're probably going to start throwing very, very soon again. Now that we're already in March, and Amari Cooper is still he's a professional NFL wide receiver. I like him. Okay. As my wide receiver too. Don't love it. Again, the way that I built my team, when you pay up for quarterback, I feel like you're chasing for the rest of the draft to the other positions. Amari Cooper was the best player I saw on the board. I just went best player available.
Yeah.
Based on my rankings. I got Jameson Williams. Now
I love
him. I love Jameson Williams right now, man. In terms of upside, people forget. Okay, so we saw Garrett Wilson, we saw Chris Olave have two elite rookie seasons. Drake London even showed moments. Treylon Brooks showed moments. Jameson Williams was projected to be the top ranked quarterback or wide receiver, excuse me, in the class last year before he tore his ACL in a national championship game. To me, Jameson Williams, in terms of his style of play, he could be easily a wide receiver one. Now, I'm going to treat this again as his rookie season. So pure explosiveness, I mean, I got him at pick 59. So I'm not expecting him to be a wide receiver one on my team, but I feel like he has that in his range of outcomes.
He does. I agree. The speed.
DJ Chark's not there anymore.
And I love the sun god, but I'm getting way more Jameson Williams in round 6 as opposed to Amon-Ra in round 2, especially on underdog. Like, I'm going to get my exposure to Amon-Ra in full point PPR once DraftKings opens up their contest. Right now, I think the explosive down the field player is Jameson Williams, and that's who I'm taking now at ADP. Like, I think we barely saw any of him last year, and I think they were smart to not rush him back, let him get his feet wet. And being a full year now outside of the ACL injury, I think he's going to have like an explosive season. I look at them as kind of more like Philly's Devonta Smith. Like, he could be the number 2 there. Like, I think he could be the Devonta Smith to Amon-Ra's AJ Brown. Whereas it's more of a 1 and 1A type situation.
I definitely agree with that. And we've seen that, I think Jared Goff has the ability to support 2 star wide receivers. And I think that's going to happen this year. So I'm definitely more of a numbers guy when I'm doing my analysis, Chris, but I do watch some tape. And this is beyond that. Go and check out Jameson Williams' highlights. So this is the peak of his powers. Jameson Williams' highlights in college, and prepare to get sick. So just do yourselves a favor. If you guys are into football, just go on YouTube, Jameson Williams highlights in college, and prepare to be sick. I then went Courtland Sutton. Don't love that pick, but it's kind of like, all right, it's my wide receiver 4, potential upside. I'm kind of hoping he gets traded, frankly.
I think
get the hell out of Denver.
That could happen. It seems like they're trying to move one of those 2 receivers, and I think they're probably higher on Judy, and we'll probably try to keep him as the number 1 there for Russ. And I would not be surprised if Courtland Sutton got traded.
For sure. Juju, same deal. Don't love it, but at this point I'm going depth. Then I waited a little bit. I went Isaiah Hodgins for the New York Giants, who he was the de facto wide receiver 1 by the end of the season for Daniel
Jones. I really like him as a Giants fan. Like, he's one of my highest owned players in these tournaments right now. Great. Like, I cannot understand why he was going like 3 rounds later than Wandell Robinson at the start of this contest. So, like, Wandell's coming off an ACL. He's 170 pounds. Like, Isaiah Hodgins, he's a guy who kind of just seemed like a prospect that slipped through the cracks a little bit. Like, he does everything well. He's not spectacular at everything, but he's 6'3". He has good size. He runs nice, clean routes. He catches everything. He had, I think, 5 touchdowns in his 7 starts for the Giants. Now, that's not a sustainable pace, but that's fantastic where you're getting him. And Daniel Jones definitely developed some rapport with him. But I think they've kind of, the way they've attacked it, they've added depth pieces. They re-signed Slayton. They signed Paris Campbell. There's no big name receivers out there. So they've kind of tried to build with depth. And I think Waller is going to be, as long as he's healthy, is going to be the number one target over there. But I think Hodgins is going to be a very productive guy for the 13th round where you're getting him. He'll be just like a solid guy that'll get you production.
I think the Giants made the playoffs last year, which I think people were a little bit surprised when you looked at where the Giants were at the start of the season. I think they've improved so far.
Yeah.
Versus last year. So overall, I think that they're doing a lot of the right things. Isaiah Hodgins, I mean, there's going to be a lot more target competition. So again, this was before all this went down. But at the same time, I still like that opportunity. Rapport is a real thing. Chemistry is a real thing in the NFL with these wide receivers and quarterback. And he showed genuine chemistry with Daniel Jones. I then went, I got John Metchie, which after this morning's trade, I mean, it's either means that John Metchie, who Lynch Hodgkin's lymphoma was what he missed last year. It sounds like he's recovering well. This was a pure, I like John Metchie coming out as round two type rookie pick last year. Like, he was one of the guys that I was taking swings on before the news came out, but possible bounce back there. Rashi Rice, a lot of people are projecting him with round two draft capital. In general, he's been one of the higher touted wide receivers. He went to the Senior Bowl, had a slow start to the week, but ended the week pretty strong. And then Jaden Reed, who
I've heard a lot of sharp people talk about him and drafting him in the last round, like the 20th round. I don't know a ton about him, but what I try to do sometimes when I'm in these drafts, I do a lot of them basically every time I walk the dog or go for a run of drafting. Like, I look at like the guys that I know are sharp, that I know what they're doing. A lot of times they'll have badges. A lot of times you do enough of them, you get to know the names. I'm cheating. I'm looking at the answer sheet. Who are you taking with your last round pick? Guys that I know are good at this. And that's a name that I don't know much about, but I've seen a lot of sharp people take in the last round. So tell me a little bit about Jaden Reed.
Yeah, so Jaden Reed, I mean, so he's a rookie wide receiver. He played for Michigan State the last couple of years. He really had his breakout season last year, had a bit of a step back this year. He kind of fell out of favor with the coaching staff, which I think is kind of common. But what I like to see is these players are going to the Senior Bowl. The wide receivers that we've seen historically kind of stand out amongst their peers. Yes, there's the Denzel Mims of the world that don't look good, but there's also been the Michael Pittmans, the Cooper Cups of the world, that when they perform at the Senior Bowl, have shown that propensity to perform in the NFL. So the price you have to pay, I mean, I paid pick 230 for this guy, essentially one of my last picks. If this guy can get round three draft capital, which again, especially during the COVID era, I feel like these NFL teams really started to place a lot more value on programs like the Senior Bowl so that they could go, they could meet the kids, they could coach them for a week. They understand that these guys are coachable. Yeah, and Jaden Reed was one of the stars of the week. So listen, it's not everything.
Wasn't that
is one
Christian
data
Watson point. Last year, right?
Christian Watson last year stood out definitively. Christian Watson coming into the Senior Bowl, like, we kind of knew who he is. He went to North Dakota State. I had one of my actually work colleagues goes to North Dakota State, so I always kind of follow that program. So I did know who Christian Watson was before, but he did well at the Senior Bowl. He came out and he tested well at the combine, and then got some pretty early round capital. And we showed glimpses last year. According to Aaron Rodgers, you want to get the ball, Christian, you got to run the right route. I get it. Hopefully Jaden Reed can run the right routes and he gets some decent draft capital. So those are the types of players I like to take upside shots on, especially before the draft, because nobody's talking about them, right? I mean, we listen to some sharp people that are experts. I mean, listen, shout out to Roster Watch, shout out to Roto Underworld. Those guys are on the ground.
That's where I get a lot of my college takes from them, and like Cody Carpentier at Player Profile and does some stuff with them. Like, because, like, I admittedly don't watch a ton of college football. Like, it's just, like, my Sundays, Thursdays, and Mondays get dedicated to the NFL. Like, I have to spend some time with the girlfriend and I do other stuff. So it's like,
absolutely.
I kind of count on the people who are feet on the ground doing the work. And I think that's how I got on Roschon Johnson, another Senior Bowl standout who I think is going to have a role in possibly day two draft capital. And that's how I got on Marvin Mims, who's been my then once I hear those guys talk about it, then I start watching some tape and doing a little research. And he seems like a guy that could exceed his draft price just based on like his combine numbers, his productivity. And just like you were saying earlier, you listened to an interview with him, right? And thought he sounded like a really sharp
kid. Sharp kid. And played a lot of special teams, right? So he's a dynamic player. You know, in college, you want to get your best players on the field whenever possible, especially in special teams. So I love Marvin Mims. Okay, so we already talked about my tight ends. So I'm not going to go into deep detail about my tight ends. Chris, we're going to get out of here shortly. Is there any takes, free agency, rookies that we haven't talked about today that you want to get off your chest?
One guy that I love, and I don't know if I have a blind spot for this guy, but my favorite, my highest owned tight end by a lot is Tennessee Titan Kig Okonkwo. I hope I'm not murdering his name.
No, you got
but
it.
I saw a great stat that I quoted somebody in my last DFS Army article that he had the highest yards per route run of any tight end in the league. I think his was like a 2.88, and like second was Kelsey at like 2.4. So he had, I mean, obviously it's a much smaller sample size. He ran a lot less routes than Kelsey, but this is a dude who like the metrics are there. Like if you watch him, he looks the part. So I think to do that as a rookie, it seems like Tannehill's going to be back there. Yeah. He could stay healthy. You know, if they get better quarterback play, there's not a lot of target competition there. You got Treylon Burks coming back, who I like too. But I think Kig Okonkwo has a lot of upside for where he's going in like the 13th round at tight end. He's somebody that I'm taking a ton of.
Yeah. So right now his ADP, this is the most recent ADP, is 140. And he's tight end 15. So for that price, what I like to do, actually, one of the things I like to do, Chris, is I like to go back to my waiver wire show notes and just look at the guys that I've been touting every single week, right? These are the guys that are high boom, high bust. Juwan Johnson of the Saints is another guy, right? That just...
For sure.
Why not, right? I mean, these guys
have tight... We've seen Derek Carr pepper tight ends before. I actually like Waller a lot more now with the Giants than I did with the Raiders. Because I think with the Raiders, he was kind of, Davante Adams is going to be the target hog in any offense he's in.
Yep.
And now if Waller could stay healthy, he's the number one. He's going to be the first look for Daniel Jones.
Definitely.
So and this was a guy who used to get drafted in like the third, fourth round in a lot of drafts in his prime when he was, 2019, 2020, when he was putting up the elite tight end numbers, but now you can get him in like the eighth, ninth round. He hasn't seen much of a bump since signing with the Giants, but I think his target share is going to be, has the potential to go right back up. I can't see any way that he stays healthy and doesn't exceed that draft price. And now I wasn't getting a ton of them before, but I've been prioritizing it now.
So he's jumped about a round since he was traded. But to your point, I don't have a lot of confidence that the Raiders actually know what the hell they're doing right now. Like, do they actually have a vision for their team? I don't see it.
No, I think they're just bringing in expatriates. Like, that's kind of...
Expats.
Expats. The bringing of the expats.
Yeah. That's right. All right, brother. That's it. So you guys want to go give Chris a follow on Twitter at Chris Felicetta. It's in the show description below. DFSArmy.com. DFSArmy.com, DFSArmy.com. Become a VIP member. Join the Discord. There's cheat sheets dropping constantly. You can play NASCAR. You can play MMA. There was March Madness strategy. There's so much out there. There's so much
content. The Masters coming up.
The Masters is coming up.
I'm gonna be like golf. digging in. I only play golf like DFS casually, but I play the majors. So that is when I will like count on the DFS Army guys. I think it's DFS up north, maybe, that does the golf stuff is really good. Like, we have the optimizer for that. We have the cheat sheets, everything. So I will be digging in hard for the Masters.
If you
want that VIP Army content, that's the time.
I would say the peak time for any sort of DFS content is probably NFL season, right? That's when people like really get into it, and that's when you get a lot more casual people. But people, like, they get the itch in the off season, man. They got to scratch that itch. So a lot of casual people will go throw a couple bucks in these DFS contests. We are actually coaching to win these contests, and real members are winning real money every single day over at dfsarmy.com. So go check it out. We got all the links below in our show description. Thank you for following along. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter at TheFlexNetwork1. Hit up DFS Army at DFS Army on Twitter, dfsarmy.com. We're here all off season talking about the NFL off season. And man, in about a month, Chris, it's going to be the NFL draft. And so everything's going to change.
I can't wait. I love it.
To me, that's my Christmas, baby. That's my Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
So Thanks for jumping on the show, Chris. We're going to have you on in a little while again to talk about some of your evolving strategies and for talk sure. everything NFL. So peace out, guys. Knowing that diamonds in my teeth, I got a lot of shine.